Are you thinking about sustainable buildings? You should be. A huge percentage of all greenhouse gases come from heating and cooling buildings, not to mention their materials, the construction, and eventually demolition. All that energy costs a lot too, and the money goes overseas. A few governments and nonprofits are working with architects and builders to create more sustainable buildings for homes and commercial structures. Today, you will hear a workshop in green building hosted by Jessica Williams, the co-director of the Cascadia Building Council. She outlines the group's movements and standards that are quickly developing to create buildings that don't damage the planet. I'm Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock. I recorded this speech at the Lighthouse Sustainable Building Center on Granville Island in Vancouver on October 4, 2008.
So my name is Jessica Williams. I'm the co-director for Cascadia Region Green Building Council. And what I was planning to talk about today is overall what we do, as well as two of our focus programs or signature programs, and they are the Living Building Challenge and Ferals. Have folks heard about them? Yeah. I think it would be really great if we could just go around and introduce ourselves, and if you can tell me one thing that you're interested in and hoping that I will cover. And if we could do that, that would be great.
I'm Alex, and I'm thinking about building a greenhouse at some point.
I'm Peter Olson. I'm an environmental engineer and interested in locally appropriate technologies.
Mm-hmm. Great. Hi.
I'm Charles Lehman. I work with Ankenman Marshall Architects, and I'm looking to comply LEED certification this year.
Yep. Oh, great.
Hi, I'm Brian Milkmore from Douglas College. I am the manager and coordinator for the Building Environmental Systems Program at Douglas College. We run a program focusing on energy conservation in buildings and built environment, training technologists to do that. And I'm here primarily trying to find ideas for my students.
Great, we got lots of them.
I know.
Sylvia Nesser. My husband and I are wanting to build a passive house.
Okay.
For green, sustainable, and healthy.
Yeah, maybe we can make it a living building.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's the interest is sort of the practical side. How does one go about getting these certifications? What does it mean?
Okay.
How do you get those little points?
It's
all kind of hazy, but when you look at some of these things, you don't have the kind of insight necessary to actually take it through to practice.
I will try to help. Sounds good.
I'm an interested member of the public.
That's great. Thanks for coming. Hi. Yeah.
Hi. My name is Laura, and same here. We just came and checked out the center.
That's great.
I'm Robin, background in architecture. I volunteer here.
Oh, great.
Interested in sustainable buildings.
That's great. All right. I am planning on keeping it fairly high level so it can be fast. But if there are specific questions, please do ask. So what is Cascadia Region Green Building Council? Just very briefly, we are the largest and oldest chapter of the U.S. and the Canada Green Building Council. What I'll cover today is what we are as a chapter, a bit of a context regionally in terms of our timeline. You won't be able to read it at the back. It's largely for me. Unfortunately, the screen wasn't working. So don't worry if you can't read the PowerPoint presentation. I'll be speaking to all of the points. We'll talk a little bit about LEED, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, and Living Building Challenge and Ferals, and other programs that we run at Cascadia. Who here has heard of Cascadia? Almost everyone before today. But we have, as a chapter of both the U.S. and the Canada Green Building Council, we are also a membership organization, whereas both the U.S. and Canada Green Building Councils have memberships institutionally and organizationally, meaning institutions and organizations as a whole are part of them. For the chapters of both the U.S. and Canada Green Building Council, we have individual members. So, for example, University of British Columbia or Lighthouse Sustainable Building Center would be, as an organization, a member of the Canada or U.S. Green Building Council, but you as an individual would be a member of a chapter. And the folks that we have as part of our membership include architects, building owners, developers, tenants, financiers, designers, urban planners, that's my own background, and the U.S. and Canada Green Building Councils promote buildings that are environmentally healthy, economically responsible, and healthy places to live and work. So we offer expertise. We steward the market transformation using LEED and other tools. We educate the industry and the public, and we're a forum for industry dialogue. And we're local leadership, and we're interested also in international impact. And one of the things that we try to do, especially at Cascadia, we have a little bit of a reputation for trying to sort of show the next step, talk about what's happening in the future. We're not necessarily, we do work at the level of incremental change and what's the small step that each of you can take. And largely, you know, through LEED and other tools, we work with the sort of middle and mainstream of the market, but we also try to talk about what's coming up and where we should be heading ultimately in a perfect world. So we have a branch network throughout the region. We cover Alaska, British Columbia, Washington, and Oregon. And in each of those regions, we have branches. So these are groups, can be 10, can be 40 individuals. They're volunteers that work hard locally to put on events and education. For example, in British Columbia, we have branches on Vancouver Island, one in the Vancouver area, and one in the Thompson-Okanagan area. And we have a LEAF, a smaller group, in the Kootenai Rockies. And that just means we actually can't provide them the same amount of support. They're not as big of a community, but there are a group of individuals there that work hard to educate and provide their communities with different programs, like, for example, LEED Users Group. Has anyone here heard of a LEED Users Group? A few people. So this is something that the branches put on. Usually each of the branches will host often once a month in Vancouver. They strive for once a month, although they take the summer off because that's not a time when people tend to go. But it's a panel discussion usually over lunch once a month. And the panelists are individuals who use LEED themselves, whether they be financiers or architects or municipal folks. But they have used LEED, and they speak to how to effectively use LEED and how to successfully achieve different points. Usually that's the focus of a LEED users group. So that's something that is managed by our volunteer branches. In terms of signaling and conveying our values at the Cascadia Region Green Building Council, we have a document called the Cascadia Principles. It's on our website. It's worth looking into. One of the things that it outlines is that we have four signal issues, and these are climate change, persistent toxic chemicals, global equity, and habitat loss, which lead to extinction. So these are the issues that we see as paramount right now, and all of our work, we strive to make a contribution to solutions for these issues. With our programming, we have a whole variety of programming. Has anyone heard of Living Future? One person. So it's a major conference. This year it happened in Vancouver in April. It's a three-day multi-track conference. Next year it's in Portland. Every year we change cities, and we're starting with the major markets. But it's focusing on, again, kind of the leading edge, looking at where we want to be going and the individuals that are leading the way. So architects and developers, for example, that are building the living buildings. Those are the types of people that you will see presenting at these conferences. On the left here, I know you can't read it, so I'll read it for you. All of our conferences, we have the Living Future Conference and the Green Broker Conference. We have a Sustainability Academy. And in that, we have a Green Broker certification. That's actually just in the U.S., but we work with the Brokerage Association in the U.S. It's similar to a LEED certification, but it's aimed at brokers, and it's tailored to be understandable by them and useful to that audience. Living Building Leader. So we have the Living Building Challenge. We have a whole series of in-depth courses that are actually based on the web that you can take to become a Living Building Leader.
So the idea is that you're really going to help to grow and catalyze the industry?
Yeah, to catalyze the industry, and it's also to recognize that LEED accreditation to become a LEED accredited professional. It does signal a certain level of understanding in the green industry, but that there is a level above that you need to. There's a lot of knowledge that you need before you can build, you know, a passive house or a living building. And so it's to give people, and it's very comprehensive. It's 36 3-hour courses to become a living building leader. And we're just developing it. It is, you couldn't take it fast enough to take everything online, but probably. But I guess, well, maybe you could if you were full-time on it right now. But there are a bunch of them online already, and we're developing them currently. So it's we're excited. I mean, I think it's partially in development, but there's certainly a lot there to start with. But you know, since the Living Building Challenge was launched, there have been a lot of questions. Well, this is great, but I need some more help. And so that's what it's there for, is to provide people more help so that they can meet the challenge. We also have we support the National Sustainable Building Advisor Program. And that is, to some extent, if you sort of envision LEED as LEED accredited professional, that's a level of training that's sort of a base level of training around green building issues, and the Living Building Leader is significantly more difficult and significantly more in depth. The National Sustainable Building Advisor Program is I'd say somewhere in between, so it's definitely more in depth than LEED. It's a several day course you take on a monthly basis. I can't remember how many days and weeks, but it's that sounds right. Thank you. Have you taken it? No.
I almost did.
Mm-hmm. And there is a course that's being offered at SFU. It's not through SFU, but I can provide you more information on how to look into that if you're interested. We also provide a lot of workshops and lectures. It's in the Canada and the U.S., and this includes working with the Canada Green Building Industry to provide LEED workshops, but also we do a variety of customized technical trainings. We do a transformational lecture series. Did anyone hear about Dennis Wild speaking the other night, or was able to go? No one was able to go, but he, for example, is a developer from Portland. That is building living buildings, and we brought him up to Vancouver to speak. And so the Transformational Lecture Series is a free series that we provide. And then also we provide Pharos training, which someone mentioned they're coming to.
How does this tie into other initiatives like the Net Zero Coalition?
The Net Zero Coalition? I actually don't know that group. There are a lot of different groups. We are tied with many of them. We try to work with many different nonprofits. We have worked pretty closely with the 2030 Challenge. The organization is actually called the Net Zero Initiative. Okay. So we do try to work with a lot of other groups, but we're always, in process of reaching out. So Canada Green Building Council membership, just to understand the difference between the two organizations, Canada Green Building Council, one would join if they wanted to shape LEED. If so, for example, if you are a member of the building industry and you want to influence LEED as a democratically shaped tool, they work in working groups, and if you are a member, you are allowed to get on a working group and advocate for changes one way or the other. So that's one reason to join the Canada Green Building Council, but it's also if you are or want to be an accredited professional and you want to take training, you become a member of the Canada Green Building Council in order to get, reductions and that sort of thing.
Do you have to be a member?
You don't have to be a Cascadia member if you want to be LEED AP. If you become LEED AP, you're LEED AP. You're done. It's just that they administer the course. Yes, and you get the materials for less money. And that's, they're a nonprofit, so that's their business model. That's how they, that's the value they provide. So that's how they make their money. But if you are thinking of becoming LEED AP, generally, as I said, an organization joins Canada Green Building Council. If you're an individual, we're working with the Canada Green Building Council to provide a much, like a, basically an individual membership, so you can get the same reductions on, you know, their the courses are expensive, the exams are expensive, the tools that they provide are expensive. They're all extremely useful, and certainly when I became lead AP, it was very useful to use those tools. So we are working with them as a chapter to provide a, I think it's, we're trying to make it a $200 membership, so but something that would then allow you those discounts. But right now we don't have it. We will have it hopefully quite shortly. But this is just to sort of understand the differences. Right now, the Cascadia membership is $100, and it gets you discounts on events, workshops, conferences, gets you discounts on different magazine subscriptions, and in Vancouver on the Zipcar and the Car Co-op, I believe, voting rights. So we have a board. Our board is comprised of six individuals from BC, Washington, and Oregon, and three from Alaska. So, you know, many people here today or many people potentially listening may be interested in volunteering or maybe potentially becoming part of the board and influencing Cascadia's future. If you're a member, you vote on who should become part of the board, just like you do if you're a member of Van City, for example. you know, our events provide networking with local members, recognition as a leader in supporting the community, and so, well, that's sort of self-evident. So this is a bit of a historical timeline. I'm going to go over very briefly. Cascadia was incorporated in 1999. The U.S. Green Building Council was incorporated in 1993. We launched the Living Building Challenge in 2006. Some of the things that we have coming up, I don't know if you are aware, the Canada Green Building Council has announced targets for where they hope they will be with in terms of LEED buildings by 2015. And it was actually really interesting. It was a few years ago at the U.S. Green Building Council's annual conference that they announced these targets. And they announced them one evening. And what they are is 100,000 LEED commercial buildings and 1 million LEED homes by 2015. So these are what you would call REACH targets. They're not easy targets. They're really difficult targets for anyone who kind of understands what that might be. 1 million LEED homes by 2015, that's only 7 years away. And we just finished our LEED Home for Homes pilot project. So we have, I think there are around 20 right now. So 1 million is a lot. So these are big targets for Canada. And it was really interesting to be at this conference. And Thomas Mueller, the head of the Canada Green Building Council, you know, he said, you know, this is really difficult, but the problem's really difficult. So we're going to make these REACH targets. And we may not get there, but we're going to try. And the U.S. Green Building Council, the U.S. is, of course, 10 times Canada's size. We're around 30,000 people. 30 million people, sorry. The U.S. is around 300 million. They actually adopted the same targets, the same numbers. And for many people who don't know that story, they think that Canada, as so often happens, because we don't have the resources, that, yeah, they think that Canada adopted the U.S. ones, but it didn't happen that way. Thomas Mueller announced them, and the next day, the U.S. Green Building Council thought, and I'm glad they adopted some targets, but it's, you know, they realized, oh my goodness, that's really very difficult. And so they scaled it down basically by 10% according to their population by adopting them at the same exact numerical level. So they're very difficult. I mean, we have a lot of challenges coming up. I don't know if any of you remember about 3 weeks ago, one of Canada's five ice shelves just melted and disappeared. You know, so we have, you know, rapid climate change happening at this kind of alarming and frightening kind of level, and then we have, you know, pine beetle fall down. They're suspecting that like 80% of BC is going to be sort of red and dead by 2013. We have all these really scary things coming up, and I don't want to turn it into a doom and gloom. We also have the 2030 challenge, and that's a whole lot of people in North America, and I would encourage each one of you to try and have a look and sign on, sign your institution on, have said, you know, we as an institution or we as an individual are going to try for all of our buildings to be carbon neutral by 2030. It's amazing the number of people. The U.S. Mayors, Conference of Mayors has signed on. So all the U.S. mayors are basically committed. And in Canada, Peter Busby, who is Order of Canada, one of our most famous architects and one of our most famous green architects, was going coast to coast talking to municipalities saying, we got to sign on. So if any of you has any influence in the institution or the organization in which you work, it would be wonderful to see more organizations signing on.
I was going to say, we have influence on October 14th.
Yep, and we certainly do. I don't know if any of the major parties is actually talking about this, but it's sort of less news. 2030 challenge is less news in Canada. I think there's that Canadian sense of we don't want to just adopt what the U.S. has done. It's a really important target. I don't think it matters who people from around the world have. And if we want to do better, let's do better. But at this point, a lot of organizations have not signed on.
Jessica,
yes?
How does the 2030 target compare to the provinces' target for provincial buildings?
The provinces target, well, actually, the UBCM is 2012, and the British Columbia government for their own buildings has said that in 2 years, they've actually said 2010, they're going to have all of their buildings be carbon neutral. And so that's, the BC government is much more aggressive, and it's actually the most aggressive in Canada, and they are definitely to be applauded for that. I think anyone who knows much about the BC government at this time knows that they need all of our help to get there. It's an incredibly ambitious target, and I think it's wonderful, but it's really unsure what they're thinking about in terms of how they're going to get there that quickly. I mean, they could, but it would take a lot of different steps than they're taking right now. So one of them is to sort of, you know, they have to be talking about living buildings at that point, and they're not. They're talking about LEED Gold buildings. And LEED Gold buildings, I mean, they can use more energy than the building they replace. I mean, depending on the building. But LEED Gold buildings are not carbon neutral. So it's a great question, and I think, you know, we have a lot to be really proud of for our government right now. They have gone out on a limb and been really bold and brave, but they really do need all of our help to get there. They're, right now, it's unclear how all of the BC government could be climate neutral in 2 years. And I should say, I mean, I spent 4 years working at Harvard University, and I helped Harvard basically some of the biggest renewable energy purchasing. And have people heard about green tags or what do we call them? And basically we have a different name that I'm not remembering, but carbon offsets, basically. If we use offsets, you can get anything by 2010. It's just a matter of purchasing enough offsets. But if you're talking about something a little more systemic and I think offsets have their place, and purchasing, you know, renewable energy somewhere else, or purchasing, you know, forests to be grown somewhere else, it definitely has their place. But, you know, at this point, the UN and other organizations have come out and actually said green buildings are one of the most efficient and effective ways of combating climate change. So they're clearly a really important part of the puzzle. And in BC, and throughout Cascadia, we have enormous leadership. In BC, we actually have hydropower, so it's our buildings are not as big of a greenhouse gas impact than they are in much of North America, but we also have a green building industry that needs to be nurtured because it's going to be rapidly, overtaken by it. But historically, we've shown a lot of leadership, so with some nurturance could be, you know, we could be exporting, and it could be, you know, part of our economy that was really growing to fill up other parts that need to be diminishing. To be exporting knowledge. I mean, right now, when you do a really deep green project, there are people locally, but then still a lot of times you get somebody from the U.S. And so we're importing knowledge. Even though we are, BC has been a leader and has, there are a lot of green firms locally, we need to really support our green building industry in order to make sure that we don't continue, that we can start to export, and we can, that it's an industry that can compete, at least in the bioregion. You know, if you see, like, companies that work in Vancouver, They also work in San Francisco. They also work in Portland and Washington and Alaska. They work regionally often. I mean, you're an architect, you know this stuff. But oftentimes for these, you know, very deep green buildings, people will start to bring in people from far away, and we need to have that knowledge here, is my argument. Well, Australia plays a part. I mean, I think, and you'll see it when I get to the Living Building Challenge, we actually, you know, make an exception for renewable energy in terms of how far away you can get it for this exact reason. I mean, Europeans just have been doing it longer, and they've got some of the best technologies right now. So to say you have to buy your renewable energy equipment here, it just, you know, isn't necessarily the right thing to say right at this point. But let me keep going. Why was LEED created? Everyone has heard of LEED here, right? I mean, is anyone new to LEED? I should ask the question that way. Yeah, so there's some people. So basically it was created, did people buy organic apples ever? You walk in, you look at your organic apple, it has a sticker on it, and I know myself, I've only had time to do research on those stickers, those little, you know, organic stickers, a few times. And the average consumer doesn't have a lot of time either for their green building information. Even when you purchase a house, you think, oh, that's a really big purchase. Most people are under enormous amounts of stress, and same with commercial buildings and enormous timelines. They want to be able to understand and trust a brand. And even in the industry, I think it's important for industry professionals to have a level playing field. So in many ways, LEED provides that. There are certainly other certifications out there that are complementary. But it's the attempt to make it transparent. So when you say you have a green building, it actually means something, and it's a matter of public record. You can go and look and see if this is rated. I don't think this space is rated yet, but for example, if it were, you could go see what does that mean? What are the points that they actually got? You know, they say they've got this or that. Because it means that somebody signed off who is liable, suable. I mean, that's the sort of litigious society we live in, but that's the reality. If somebody is putting their professional career on the line and saying, these are all the points, these are all the things that were achieved in this building. So the intention of LEED is to transform the marketplace. And this is, many of you cannot see this chart, but it is a little chart, LEED in the marketplace. If you imagine regulations as the sort of base level, most people, it's what the codes are intended. They're intended to basically make buildings livable, make them safe. That's on the sort of far left side, and on the far right side, you've got sort of 5% innovators. What LEED is trying to do is take the vast majority of the market, most of the people under the biggest part of the curve, and pull them forward. And it's a constant process. LEED is being updated all the time, and it's going to get harder as the market moves forward. But what we have with the Living Building Challenge is that 5%. And I know this is a horrible graph, and it's, I'm sure, almost impossible to see at the back. This 20%? The 70% or the 20%? The 20% is the market, if you would, I mean, these are definitional, but you would say there were market leaders, and the 5% would be actually sort of the bleeding edge, the risk takers. It's people trying to do things that actually haven't been done here or haven't been done at all. Does that make sense?
And so with...
And I'm not sure how what looks red at the back, but this big square is basically saying this is 70%, and that's where LEED is. It's trying to pull them all forward, if that makes sense.
70% of the market.
70% of the market, exactly. This is probably a little out of date now. This is LEED projects and LEED APs in Canada. In BC, this is out of date, I know, because I just updated some of these, but in BC we have 37 LEED buildings. It's interesting to note that, for example, Portland, city of Portland, which is actually a smaller city than the city of Vancouver, they have 49 LEED buildings. And we are the leaders in Canada. We have 37, and that's the most. Ontario has, I think it's 36 now. As I mentioned, these are a tiny bit out of date, but... there are Portland, we really are leaders on this coast, but Portland and Seattle are always kind of neck and neck, but they're more almost twice, not twice as many, but significantly more lead projects in the city of Portland than in all of British Columbia. So we have, you know, we should be proud of the leadership, but we should also recognize, you know, in the sort of friendly spirit of competition, that we have a long way to go to even sort of catch up with some of our neighbors to the south. And we have lots that we can learn from them in terms of their incentive packages for developers and that sort of thing. Advantages of LEED: it's not overly prescriptive, it's a voluntary program, it has legitimacy and consistency, it's third-party verification. Terminology, people often say LEEDs when they call me and say, I'm interested in this LEEDs program, just so you know, it's just LEED, there's no plural. A project is certified, an individual is an accredited professional, so I have after my name a LEED and an AP, it just means I'm an accredited professional, so I've taken the exam and I've passed it.
You are listening to Jessica Williams, co-director of the Cascadia Building Council. Jessica outlines the new green standards for building energy-efficient, earth-friendly buildings. This recording comes from Vancouver, Canada, on October 4th.
And then, a project is registered. You basically register a project before, when you're in the drawing stage and all the way through development. Once it's built, you certify it. So there's a LEED certified project, there's a LEED registered project, and there's a LEED accredited professional. So those are all kind of jargon, but useful. People definitely, it's beginning. I mean, as an architect, maybe I'll ask you, are you a practicing architect? And more firms have large numbers or larger numbers that are becoming accredited. But
Our clients, generally are concerned, to put it mildly, about venturing into the issue of LEED, because they're all petrified that mm-hmm. this is going to cost them a fortune. And in most cases, they don't even care about how much it's more might cost to build, or mm-hmm. whether it, there's a, you know, or whether there's a payback mm-hmm. associated with it, or any of that. It's just the increased cost in professional fees alone. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, I'm not going to spend even $1,000 unless there's a guaranteed kind of marketing angle on this that's mm-hmm. going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. It's, if there's any kind of cost associated with it, they're not really interested. They don't. Most of our clients do not yet get that this is a kind of a moral or ethical issue, in that they should care enough to want to do it. Mm-hmm. They're just not there.
And in many ways, I think the U.S. Green Building Council has worked very effectively with that, the non-moral part of all of us, the self-interested part of all of us, in that they've made it very easy as a program to go through. I mean, relatively easy. It's still difficult for many people, but it takes what is actually a mammothly sophisticated and complicated subject and brings it down to level of points so you can. But they also... try to use sort of self-interest to get there. But I think you have a great point. Many people are still really not interested. And actually in Canada and the U.S., in the U.S. there are, I don't know the exact numbers, but I know there's over 100 municipalities that have mandated LEED for their own buildings. And state and federal agencies are doing the same, and the same is happening in BC. Now with the 2010 imperative from the, it's not called the 2010 imperative, but the 2010 carbon neutral requirement for part of that for the BC government, they're mandating that all of their own buildings are LEED Gold. And that has an impact on other agencies. BC Housing, for example, I know is also mandating LEED. But I think that we're about at the tip of a tsunami where I think you really make an incredibly important point. There are lots of professionals and lots of owners that are petrified, don't understand. And the reality is LEED can be more expensive. Primarily, it can be more expensive if people don't know, because you are building things differently, using different materials, you're using different ways of building, using different methods. And if you have to learn all that, or if your architect and other individuals have to learn all that, that has to be paid for. It does. That doesn't come from nowhere. You know, in our architectural office, you have a spec room, and those are the specs you're comfortable with, and you reuse them, and you reuse them, and you reuse them, and that's it's a conservative industry, and you use what works, and we're talking about using something new. So as people become more educated and have experience, it makes an enormous difference. you know, there have been LEED Platinum projects, several of them, that have been built. So with LEED, there's certified silver, gold, platinum. And so the platinum is the highest and most difficult level. There have been platinum projects that have been built for the same cost as a standard building, but they weren't built by architects who had never done it before. You know, they were built by people who had done it a few times and had that knowledge base. So I think that's an important thing. I'm a little confused though, because U.S. Green Building Council owns and sort of owns a license to LEED. So what you're talking about is the Canada Green Building Council's submission process. They are and they're not. I mean, if you look at the chart, and I'm not sure if I have one here, the chart of LEED uptake. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean,
well, that's going to be my second point that I'm not
going to make. Yeah. It is being adapted. Did you want to say something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've worked with a lot of companies from all over different sectors on pollution mainly, mm-hmm. storage limits, things like that. And what I hear over and over again is, I just want to meet the regulations. I don't care if you can get me above that. I just want to meet the bare minimum regulation.
Mm-hmm.
That I get over and over again from companies. And I suspect this is the same thing. Companies
yeah, some people...
to the regulations, to the code.
Right, and that gets back to the chart here, which is, you know, it's about 20% of the market that are market leaders that are willing to do a few things, maybe they're willing to do LEED. It's about 5% that are willing to talk or even think about like a living building challenge. It's the vast majority that really, they want to be maybe a bit ahead of the regulations.
I think the point there was we need to attack the regulations and get them pushed over.
And if you look at the history of LEED, that's what...
And that's the way you go. I think that's where we'll really make a difference.
Well, that's the history of LEED. I mean, that's over the last 15 years, and that's why there are over 100 municipalities and state agencies in the U.S., mm-hmm. and the number in Canada is, I think it's around 20 municipalities, we're a smaller place, that have mandated LEED for their own municipal or government buildings, and then as a government, I think you have to first clean your own house and figure out how to do it yourself, and then some organizations like Vancouver are starting to actually put it into their building code. Yeah.
Can I jump in one comment?
Yeah.
I was told about a home that was built in West Vancouver, and they used the LEED standards. I don't remember which level it was that they mm-hmm. used, but they said they got the entire home built in 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the benefits was that a lot of the decisions were made for them, so mm-hmm. the homeowners were able to go through the process a lot quicker.
Mm, that's interesting. This is just briefly, in the U.S., there are different tools, different LEED tools for different types of product, and honestly, there are more than even are on this, because I know when I was in the States, I worked on a LEED for Labs pilot. The labs aren't even here, but there are different buildings really do require, they are different. Like a laboratory is a very different building than a residential building. And so they have LEED for new construction. That's the first one that was developed in 1993. That's what we have in Canada. We have LEED Canada, but it's LEED for new construction. Commercial interiors we also have in Canada. People call it LEED CI. And that's what this is. This space is a commercial interior. A Lighthouse leases the space. They don't have the ability, for example, to meddle with that incredibly inefficient heating system. They're just not going to mess with it. But they can do the finishes. And so that's what they get judged on. They don't get judged on the incredibly efficient heating system. And so that's why this is a great sort of showcase for people. You know, you do what you can do, basically. LEED for existing buildings, that's what Brian was talking about. That's when you have an existing building and you can do maybe small renovations and tweaks, and you can do commissioning and other things. LEED for core and shell, that's the opposite of this building. That's if I'm a developer and I develop a building downtown, for example, I just am going to get rated or judged on the core of the building and the shell of the building, because they'd be leasing out to folks like Lighthouse or other people who will then come in and they'll do like LEED CI, for example. LEED for homes in Canada, that's now our third LEED product. We have just gone through the LEED for homes pilot project. So if you are a homeowner, even if you're thinking about doing a passive home or a living building, it's useful just to look at the tool and see if you can, you know, just as a tool, if you can gain anything from it. And also, I should note, we have a series of green building tours in BC that we just finished. We had LEED for Home pilot in Victoria, but you know, in future years, we're going to have more LEED homes on our tours, but it, as homeowners, it can be helpful to come to places like Lighthouse to see what they do with their space, but hopefully there'll be more and more lead homes that you can tour as well. Lead for neighborhood development. Do folks know about Dockside? I'm sure many people do. It's a big development in Victoria. They actually were part of the Lead for Neighborhood Development pilot. They achieved the highest rating, highest LEED Platinum rating of any neighborhood development, but they actually have 10 stages, so they have like 10 times they have to go through the rating system, but they've been through it once and they got really high points. LEED for schools. So these are all the U.S. Green Building Council's rating systems. We just have a few of them, but if there is one that hasn't been adapted to the Canadian context, you can always use the American one and apply through the U.S. Green Building Council.
So those, that's all of the ones in the States and Canada?
In Canada, we just have LEED for new construction, and we have LEED for commercial interiors, but for any of the other ones, you can use the American system. We just finished the pilot project in Canada, so the ETA for the actual Canadian system is I think it's late February or early spring, basically, next year.
Could you give an example of what kind of differences there would be
in Canadian? It's basically, there really aren't a lot of differences in terms of the substantive points, because the license agreement is pretty careful about LEED as a brand is intended to mean something globally. Really, the difference is if you go through LEED, it references different laws. So in Canada, we reference the Canadian laws and the Canadian standards. So when it says, you know, be 50% better than this or that, you know, in Canada, we use the appropriate, I mean, and it uses ASHRAE as well, but it's really making it appropriate that way so that we don't reference U.S. wetlands laws that people just don't understand here. Again, this is the LEED. Silver is different points level, 26 to 32 points. Platinum is above 52 points out of 70 points possible. It has six areas, five sort of substantive areas. The sixth is about innovation and design, sustainable sites, water efficiency, energy and atmosphere, material resources, and indoor environmental quality. And then there's a area where you can get credits for showing innovation and design. I don't think I'm going to go through all the points. I need to get through to Living Building Challenge. But I do recommend if you haven't downloaded the LEED rating system, LEED NC or LEED for Homes, they're easy to read. You know, they can be thick documents, but scanning them, they're simple and I think fairly engaging. The Living Building Challenge, the intention in its creation was to actually get to the point where we talk about neutrality with respect to the environment, so sustainability rather than greenness. And the intention isn't that every building needs to be like this necessarily, but that we need to know what this is. We need to know what sustainability is so that, you know, it comes in the context of, as I mentioned before, many platinum buildings in North America are being built with little or no cost premiums. Many people are going above and beyond. They're actually going to Europe looking for the passive house tool. The passive house tool is great, but it doesn't actually talk about sustainability in all of the areas. It talks about in terms of energy. So the intention is to create to codify what does sustainability mean. Many people think that Living Building Challenge, it's actually the point where you're giving back to the environment. That's not true. It's actually the point where you're neutral. You're energy neutral, you're water neutral, you're neutral in terms of your toxic materials and other materials. So it's looking at neutrality. So this is the context. Basically, the punchline is that there are no prerequisites. Sorry, it's all prerequisites. There's no credits. The intention is to take away has anyone been part of a typical LEED process where you or been responsible for getting the LEED accreditation, sort of registration? And yep, so it's an extremely administrative process, an enormous amount of human time and effort goes into that administration. So when you get this point and that point and, you know, 50 points if you're in platinum. And each one of those points is highly administrative. The intent is to take that human energy and potential and skill and turn it around, p- put it up front and say, we're going to make this a much harder goal in terms of the building, but the certification is going to be much easier. And so what you see when you look at the Living Building Challenge, and I recommend you we have it online to download a copy, is kind of you're there or you're not. You know, we're looking at water neutrality, energy neutrality. We have a red list of materials that you're simply not allowed to have in your building. It does become more complex because, for example, PVC, which is in the materials red list, there are municipalities in BC where it is mandated by code that your plumbing must be PVC plumbing. So we recognize that there are market realities and you can work with your municipality to try to change them. But you know, there are some exceptions, but the intention is to sort of look at what would be a building if it was actually at the level of sustainability. So I'm going to go over a few of these in terms of site. We're looking at responsible site selection and a bunch of prerequisites that actually look very similar to LEED. That has criteria that are similar to LEED. Limits to growth, that's very different from LEED. It's basically saying you cannot build on a greenfield site. It has to be a gray or brownfield site. It has to be a site that's already had a building on it. And if it hasn't, and if you want to build on a greenfield site, that's fine, but you can use LEED. Habitat exchange is basically saying for each acre of land that is taken by development, you have to have another acre of habitat exchange. Energy, net zero energy, fairly simple. I mean, it's complex in reality, but it's a simple goal. We have the materials. We have this red list. It's a long list of materials that we want out of buildings, things such as mercury. And again, mercury is a great example. I mean, mercury is right there, and we make an exemption for fluorescent tubes, but it's also to recognize we need to kind of figure out this fluorescent tube business as well, because it's great that they're so energy efficient, but the reality is that a lot of these just get dumped. There are supposed to be ways of safely taking the mercury out of them, but a lot of people don't do it, and it's mercury, and mercury is a nasty business. So we ultimately want them out of our buildings. Construction carbon footprint, we want a one-time carbon offset to take into account the carbon footprint of the building. Responsible industry, that's actually basically saying FSC. Appropriate materials, there's a service radius, and that's where I referred earlier in terms of, for example, renewable energy. We have a radius that allows you to buy renewable energy technology from Europe because we recognize that that's where some of the best materials come from. But it also sort of says, you know, light materials, it's okay to have light materials from a little further away than really heavy materials. So in LEED, you have this one radius. We have a little bit more complexity in our radius. Leadership in construction waste. Again, it tends to be sort of either you're there or you're not. It's not completely, like, with these, and I know I have a copy of the document right over there, but you know, there are buildings that get very close to 100% in terms of demolition waste. Almost no one gets to 100. So we try to take that into account. But in terms of different materials and where how they can be recycled and remanufactured and that sort of thing, the levels are pretty close to 100, but it differs depending on, you know, if it's brick or if it's gypsum or what have you. Net zero water and sustainable water discharge, so that you have all of the water being taken care of on site. That's probably the most difficult, and in terms of the codes, the most challenging of the whole living building challenge. You know, have indoor environmental quality and beauty and inspiration and education. The building is required to be open for a day, a year. I mean, I'm not going to go into these in depth because they're there is some complexity to them, but to give you a bit of a flavor, we had a competition when we first announced this in the U.S. Green Building Council's conference. There's a competition, but one thing, there are no certified buildings yet. To be a certified living building, you have to be in operation for a year, and then you can go through the certification process. So you have to have a year's worth of energy data, a year's worth of water data, and that sort of thing. Probably the first building that will be built is this project in New York by BNIM Architects, although there's also one on the island, on Vancouver Island, that has been built. We don't know for sure if it is a living building. The owners believe that it probably is. They need to go through the process.
EcoSense?
Yeah, that's EcoSense, Gord and Baird's residence. There are over 50 projects in North America, at least 50 that we know of in Vancouver, and that's a picture of EcoSense right there. In Vancouver, we have six that we know of that are aiming for it, and they're actually all kind of interesting. This is Robert Bateman. He's for those of you who don't know, one of our more famous nature painters. His new art center at Royal Roads is going to be a living building. And it was important for him. Obviously, his work is in the natural, he paints the natural environment. He wanted the building to be a very, very deep green. But it was also important for his fundraising for that center, that the building speak to the ethics that were allegedly, part of the building. This is the Van Dusen. They have a $20 million upgrade that is going to be a living building. Also a great context in the middle of a garden. North Vancouver Outdoor School, the SIRS building, SFU Daycare, and of course the Bard Residence. So there are six projects locally that are aiming for it.
What was the last one?
The Baird Residence, the one we were talking about. Yeah. So, and it's, it is an evolving standard. 1.3 just came out, and we have this living building leader training. We have a white paper. We're doing a lot of work on the code challenges and barriers that is going to be coming out pretty shortly. And we have a financial study that is coming out to look really carefully at what are the financial impacts of these buildings. I know I'm over time. Pharos, just very quickly, is like the Living Building Challenge in many ways. It's an intention to sort of set really clearly where we want to be going. So if this is a shoreline and these are all boats, and if you look at them, some of them look, from the shoreline, if you're standing there, it would look like they were all aiming to go to Restoration Island. But if you look from above, you realize that some of them are never going to get there. Some of them are really way off course. So the intention is to sort of say, what is that island? And that's what Pharos means. It's one of the wonders of the world. It's the lighthouse at Mykonos. So the intention is to say, well, we want to get to this place that's actually restoration. We don't want the nasties in our building materials anymore. And right now, it's sort of the nutritional facts for your building materials. Right now, it's actually really difficult to get really robust information on materials. If for anyone who works in an architecture firm, when you're looking for materials information, you actually have to go to the manufacturer largely. You don't have time to do your own primary research. So you're dealing with the information that they give you, and they give you partial information. So the intention is to actually create consumer demand for this information. And so we're working with a number of different organizations to we've come up with a very, I think, robust set of requirements for the materials. The intention is that it's not just ecologically sustainable, we're also looking at social sustainability in terms of the working conditions of the people who make the materials. I think, so we're looking at, if you look at the tool, I'm going to skip ahead. There are all these little wedges. Say, for example, fair compensation is one wedge. So in the early new year, we will have, I think, 500 materials rated by a team of university researchers with this incredibly complex system, but to make it as clear and simple as possible so that you look and you see for one material, you can see, okay, what are the climate impacts? What are the toxic releases? What's the indoor environmental quality? What's the community contributions, the corporate practices, the equality in terms of the worker equality, fair compensation, consumer safety, occupational safety. And so the intention is that you want a product that has as much green as possible, basically as much filled in as possible. The red is the stuff that's you know, real danger stuff is easy to get. The green is stuff that's harder to get. So the closer to the full circle is a more, is a better product. But it means that you can decide as a company, you know, social, for example, social sustainability is more important to us, and you can make that choice, whereas you cannot do that right now. There just is not this information for most products in the building industry. So that's basically the punchline for Pharos. We do have training coming up. This is our website. It's got tons of resources on it. Please have a look. And I guess I'll just end by saying that, you know, it is the time for big leaps. If we don't make really big leaps at this point, we are going to leave our children with no choice but to make really big leaps. And so we have a responsibility. The time to act is now.
Could we still end up with a huge carbon problem if we go with just LEED buildings and don't aim for these higher standards?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I think that's absolutely true. There's a famous example, probably referred to too much, but I'm going to refer to it, the LEED Silver Building in Seattle. It was the library in Seattle was built, and it the building it replaced was significantly more energy efficient than the building that was built, and it was LEED Silver. So LEED, and you probably can speak to this even better than I can, Brian, but LEED looks at, it doesn't look at it, and in North America, this is what we do generally. I think we do a bad job with energy, but we look at, you know, percentage change against a standard that's modeled, energy modeled, and what is, basically, you're allowed to model the energy of the worst building that's buildable by code. So the worst lights and the worst, and so you compare yourself as a percentage, how much are you better if your building is the same design but uses the technologies and the walls and the windows and the, you know, that your building uses, how much better? And that's what we get, our 50% better than MACB or 50% better than ASHRAE, is that type of system. You're not talking about absolutes. You're not talking about, as they do in Europe much more, they talk about, and the passive house, they talk about how much energy use per square foot. So people have a language and they understand. In Canada, in North America, and LEED isn't, it's not LEED's fault. It's an ASHRAE standard and it's an industry standard in Canada and the States. We talk about percentage reduction from an energy model, and it's It's an intensity-based target, and it's like saying, it's like taking a Hummer and saying, we're going to be 50% better. Well, congratulations. That's actually not where we wanted to be going, you know? So, you know, I think LEED is incredibly important, and I'm LEED AP, and I think aspiring to do LEED buildings is still a very useful goal, and I think if you're an architect or a developer or somebody who's part of the design process and the building process, I don't think you could do a living building before doing at least a few LEED buildings. But I do think, you know, the ice is melting and quite literally actually disappearing. I was just petrified. I still have chills down my spine. And I actually, the day after that, I gave a presentation and I burst into tears and I was completely inconsolable in front of like 50 people, because one of Canada's five ice shelves is just, it's gone. I mean, that's creepy. And this is a challenge, this is a living building challenge. It's challenging, it's difficult, but we don't really know what we're doing in terms of messing with the environment right now.
That was Jessica Williams, co-director of the Cascadia Building Council. She delivered this workshop on green buildings at the Lighthouse Sustainable Building Center in Vancouver on October 4th, 2008. This recording comes from Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock. You can find our website at ecoshock.org. Find out more about the Cascadia Regional Building Council at www.cascadiagbc.org, cascadiagbc.org, or the Canada Green Building Council at cagbc.org, and the Lighthouse Center at sustainablebuildingcenter.com.